Welcome to the Elmo's World Podcast, and this is my second video episode. It's up on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music, so you guys should check it out, and thank you so much for following. I have here a guest that I have just met, but his name is Joshua Hatfield. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes.
All right. Joshua, can you introduce yourself and tell us what you're all about?
My main passion is computer programming. I also play Minecraft because, you know, I share that passion with my kids. It's a family activity. I'm not always with them, and something we can do, you know, together, with both my kids and, sometimes their mother or my cousins. And it's a nice way to be able to remotely, hang out with a family.
Awesome. So can you tell us about, like, first, do you believe in God? Why don't you believe in God? Morality, all that. Like, can you give me less, like, as a, in a nutshell, what do you believe?
In a nutshell, I would say, no, I don't believe in God. Generally speaking, I would ask a person to define a God, because as not believing, I can list a whole lot of things I don't believe in. As a believer, the believer would be the one asking me if I believe in their God, but I don't necessarily know what their God is. For example, Einstein made reference to God several times, but he also referred to it as Spinoza's God, which is basically a personification of the universe and calling that God, although I might be oversimplifying things. So, you know, if I said something like, oh my God, I might be referring to that. But as far as an intelligent instigator of the supernatural instigator of any kind, I don't see any reason to think that there is one. If there was a way to prove that there was one and that proof was given, then I could say, you know, if the proof is there, but so far I haven't seen it.
Same. Like, if their proof is there, it's like undeniable proof, you know, that God is real, I believe, you know, just right there, you know?
Yeah. Unfortunately, because of the concept is supernatural, functionally, there is no way to make such a proof. Mm-hmm. So my admission that I would accept such a proof, in a sense, almost feels a little empty in the fact that there actually is no way to make a proof. I'll give you an example. If, for instance, if somebody were to say, oh, my God will visit you tonight in your dream or something like that, and then I had a dream of some God, it wouldn't necessarily be a supernatural thing. I could just be, I mean, people dream. I have weird dreams sometimes, you know, and sometimes those dreams are prompted by things that people say to me. And how could I tell if that was just not another, you know, prompted dream, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, we can't really have anything that we could say is absolutely true. You know, there's nothing we could truly be certain in this universe. That's why, even solipsists are, like, the only ones that could say for certain that, hey, you know, like, the only thing that I can truly be sure of is that I'm thinking, that I exist, you know. The rest of the world, I can't prove anything for them, you know.
Well, you have to be able to trust at a certain level that certain things are, and you have to do that in order to think, because if you don't accept those things. But what you can do is you can build on top of those things. For instance, in effect, we can prove something like gravity, because we can measure it, we can test it over and over and over again. And I think what you're saying is we can never really know for sure, but we can know within a lot of decimal places if we are first trusting the fact that our mutual experience of the universe actually existing is in fact trustworthy. And yeah, it's that which is fundamentally what we can't tell. And I think that actually goes, there's a number of astrophysicists who I don't wouldn't say advocate, but at least toy with the idea that we're existing in some kind of matrix, and there's, you know, some other more advanced civilization that's created this matrix, but we wouldn't be able to tell. And that kind of goes back to that same point, is that we can't tell. No, that's true. But what of what we all seem to witness and all seem to collaborate on, we can put things on top of that. So we'll make the fact that we exist an axiom, and then on top of that axiom, we can prove things. You know what an axiom is, right?
Yeah.
Like defining parallel lines as straight. Mm-hmm. It's something you say, okay, well, maybe we can't prove this, but we can make it an axiom, and we can prove things on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's something about, like, the, you know, in human history, the concept, the fact of whether there is a God or not has been so essential to our existence, you know? But for a lot of, like, other societies and cultures, it really hasn't. You know, like for Buddhism, for Shintoism, for Eastern, mm-hmm. most of Eastern, I guess, mythology or religions, having like like this one God ruling over everything isn't really that like essential for them.
You know? Sure. No, I get what you're saying. I think I have a slightly different view on that. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is the current Western idea of a monotheistic God, which is an individual that is all powerful. Mm. But that's not even the origin of the Jewish God. As a matter of fact, Bart Ehrman talks a lot about this. In the beginning, it's funny I would say that, as that is the beginning of the Bible. But in the book of Genesis, God is also often referred to in the plural. And apologists usually say that is the plural of majesty, as one would refer to the Queen of England in, I wouldn't say modern days, but you know, maybe 100 years ago, they might use the plural of majesty and refer to the Queen as they or something like that. But I believe he has the perspective that at least at the time it was written, they were considering El, which is the singular form, to be a specific God, and Elohim, which is the plural form, to actually be a plural, like the gods, as you might hear in a play written about the Romans, how they would refer to the gods, the pantheon. And then it merged into a more singular monotheism as time went on. But that's actually slightly off the point I was trying to get to. Is the Hindus and even the Native Americans, they might not call them gods, and obviously they wouldn't use the English word, but they do have concepts of spiritual forces. Mm. And who's to say that even the Jewish may have come, I mean, there was a time before these words were written, it may have come from a similar idea of spiritual forces that they've given names, and then they got personalities, and then they got consolidated.
Animism.
But the supernatural agency is really the defining concept. Richard Dawkins actually mentions that in his book, The God Delusion, is humans have a desire to find agency, and it's an evolutionary desire. When you hear, you know, a sound coming from the bushes, if you imagine without proof that there is something making that sound that's intelligent, it's probably a wolf or tiger or wants to kill you, and you get the heck out of there, you survive. If you don't make that jump and it's nothing, you're fine. If you don't make that jump and it is something, you're dead. So, you know, there's a pressure towards trying to find or trying to attribute an agency. So believing in God does seem to me to be a natural desire of sorts, or not necessarily God in the, you know, monotheistic way, but at least in the, you know, the spiritual, the spiritual realm of an intelligence forces some kinds.
You know, I always ask myself the question, like, is humanity ready to exist without a God? Right? Like, because if you look at China, there's a billion people out there who don't believe in a monotheistic God, you know? So why can't the rest of the world? But is it so ingrained in our culture, like especially Western ideology, where most of the like human rights morality is grounded on this belief that things are made sacred inherently by this by something out there, usually Christian God, you know.
Well, I don't think there's sections of society actually.
Yeah.
I think some sections are ready and some sections aren't. And the problem with the scenario that causes some not to be ready is that, like me, for instance, I was raised my entire life being taught that there was this presence, and you know, me figuring out that, you know, maybe the things I was seeing that were called miracles were happy coincidences, or maybe they weren't even miracles and they were actually more tragic than I was led to believe.
Yeah.
In some case, but you know, a lot of people have these personal experiences that they've attributed and they've built up and built up and built up that, to me, they amount to a lucky sock. Do you wear a lucky sock when your baseball team is playing and they win, and then you wear it again and they win, and you wear it again and they win, and you wear it one time and they don't win, and you're like, well, you know what? It's just a lucky sock, you know. But if you have a good team and they're content, you know, they're winning mostly, and or maybe you just happen to not wear the sock on the day they don't win. You know, each one of those is you know, a reinforcement. Mm. So all of these things that I view, and lucky sock is just an example that, you know, obviously nobody's considering lucky sock to be proof of God, but it's a proof of a superstition. And, you know, you have all of these things of similar value that seem to be a lot when you think back, and you have a lot of positives, and your negatives are basically swiped under the table. Swept under the table. Sorry.
Well, yeah, but it's really I guess, like, it doesn't even matter whether or not God does exist or not, you know. But the question of, like, is society overall ready to just remove that concept overall? Like, the same way Friedrich Nietzsche said, like, God is dead. You know, because humanity used to really rely on having this God, this God for meaning, for the valuing existence, for virtue, for reliant on everything. It's like God was the foundation of everything, but because of humanism
I understand what you're saying. My point was more that they're not psychologically ready to get rid of God in general.
In
general, because of, you know, it's a core concept that's ingrained from birth,
mm-hmm.
Into most of the, especially conservative Christians, in the U.S. And such an ingrained idea is really difficult to get rid of.
Well, here's the thing, right?
They're attributing.
Not just that. Even for me, like, I'm atheist right now, but like, there were so many core concepts of being in a sane human that's correlated with God. For example, free will, right? Right now I'm a determinist, but free will is like, it's so ingrained in my frame of mind where it's something that I can't remove, you know. I can't function nor as a normal human being without free will, and that is definitely correlated with like the concept of God and him giving mankind being agency to decide for their own the futures and destinies for themselves, and morality, right? Like how can I function as an amoral human being, you know? Definitely, if I ask myself as an atheist or a naturalist, right, there is absolutely no objective morality in the world. So why am I not just stealing and killing and lying at every opportunity I can, you know?
And you're saying you don't have the answer to why you don't do it.
Well, right now the struggle is like, how do I function as a normal human being without going completely insane, because my past frame of mind was so ingrained with this God concept and everything shatters, you know, when I remove that.
Oh, I think I understand. You're a relatively new atheist then. Okay. Yeah. I had to go through that as well. A lot of the things that you've mentioned, they, they really don't rely on God. I'll give you an example. Free will. Everything that you do, everything you choose to do, is understood fundamentally as a chain of chemical and electrical interactions that happen predominantly in your brain. Some of them happen in your stomach and your backbone and the rest of your nervous system, and all the hormones and chemicals that are in your body contribute to some degree. Now, the free will is, from a purely chemistry perspective, it's an illusion. You have all of these signals going through, and you feel like you're making this choice. And really you are, but it's you as a result of physics and not a supernatural embowment into your, that's the wrong word, imbuement into your flesh body. A lot of people have a trouble because they want to have their own free will as one of those spiritual agencies we've mentioned before, which is where the idea of soul comes from. You're probably hearing my dogs, aren't you?
No, it's okay.
I apologize.
No, it's no problem. So anyway, like right now, actually, like I am still bordering on compatibilist and determinist, because if I go hard determinist, you know, then I'm the way I would see the future right now is less, like there's just one destiny. You know, like whatever I do, that's the future can never change, and that's how I will live my life.
No, I get you, and I guess when I say that free will is an illusion, it functionally it's real. You are making those choices. They are chemical reactions, and what is going to happen is going to happen. This conversation is going to happen. You're going to think about this conversation. You're going to make a decision about this conversation. And that decision, from the perspective of the greater universe, effectively is already made. Mm. But you still make it in real time as the universe unfolds.
It still doesn't jive. You know, like the thing is, if you believe that you have agency, right, or at least like you're making these decisions, then there should be alternate realities that are contingent on your decision making, but there isn't if it's a deterministic universe.
I suppose that is under debate. It's actually impossible.
How can you say that you're deciding something if there is no alternate reality? Right? You're not making a decision if the option is only A.
Okay. Let me give you a comparison. And I watched this and it was fascinating. It was a video about this people that were studying bees. And bees are a hive mind, and your brain is actually a hive mind. You have signals that are competing against each other. And what the bees do is that they take the information that they get, they bring it back to the beehive, and they share it with the other bees. And that's what your brain does. Now, what happens is that the bees that get, let's say a bee finds a new hive potential that's, you know, 10% bigger than another bee's potential hive. And the one that found the bigger hive will tell the other one, basically, I found a bigger hive. And the whichever of those two ideas gets the most effectively votes is going to be the new hive that they go to. It is a choice that the bee structure makes, but it's fundamentally, it will always choose the bigger place, because the information that comes in is the same. Yeah. And the information that you get into your head goes through your brain in a similar process. And you're always going to make the decision that you're going to make at whatever time you make it, because that's the information you have.
But don't you see what you're saying? It's so weird, right? Like, for example, if I'm lazy and I could either go to a job interview or stay at home and like watch movies all day or play video games, right? If I believe in free will, like I decide my future and I could change everything, It's in my power on whether I would be a successful person being able to support myself or just being a lazy bum my whole life, right? Those are two possible realities that depend on my decision making.
Yeah, but there's only one you.
But this me.
There's only one you.
Yeah, but this me could decide whether to go to the job interview or stay at home, right? Like. That's completely two possible things, you know. But why I'm buffering at the compatibilist towards determinism is that we don't know the nature of consciousness yet, of whether it could be serve as like a buffer of whether like, you know, it's just so weird, you know, consciousness. We don't really know if it does follow determinism. Like the logical, positivistic nature of the universe. We don't know.
Well, determinism is fundamentally a theological argument. It's not an argument that's based in reality. It's a thought process, a thought game, basically.
Yeah.
But what reality is that there's only one you. There's only one set of chemical reactions and hormones and electrical reactions that are going on in your brain, and that set of reactions is going to make a choice, and it's going to feel like you're making the choice because it is you making the choice, but it's you as a result of these electrochemical reactions. And an electrochemical reaction happens the same way if it's in the same condition. So if you take, you know, an explosive and you light it, it's going to blow up every time, you know.
Yeah.
But once you blow it up, that chemical reaction is gone. So what's happening inside you is there's only one set of this chemical reaction that is your body and your brain, and that's the one that's going to happen.
Yeah, but I definitely agree with that, right? About the universe's deterministic nature. But the thing is, I guess like I still don't know the nature of consciousness yet enough to really say that there is no such thing as agency, you know, and that the universe is just one calculator that will result in one answer every time, like every universal lifespan. I still don't know yet. Do you get what I mean? Like
I feel like it's kind of like the time travel problem. If the time travel question is, if you could go back to an earlier version of yourself, what would you change? And the real answer is you wouldn't change anything, because as the earlier version of yourself, you wouldn't have the information you've gained from then till now. You only have the information that you had at that point, and you would make the same decisions because that's the information that you had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the desires that you had. For instance, what you said about being lazy. If you go back to that specific instant and you thought about being lazy and decided not to, you're going to go back to there and you're still going to have the desire to not be lazy.
Yeah,
because that's the condition that your body was in.
But if you really, if you apply that in normal wisdom of in the normal wisdom of life, you know. Like, hey,
you. Don't do that.
No.
Now, let me explain why I say don't.
But isn't that like a contradiction? Like, we're trying to remove the God.
No, it absolutely is not.
From normal.
No. Well, I believe it was Neil deGrasse Tyson somewhat recently said, you know, the universe is under no obligation to make sense to you. What we have. Either there's free will or there's an illusion of free will. Either way, we have to operate as though there's free will, because we're not designed. Our brains aren't designed to understand quantum physics. Our brains designed to live in a savanna in Africa with lions chasing us.
That's kind of dumb.
So we have to operate.
Like how would we evolve to be better, you know, from our predecessors if we do not change all these obsolete things like belief and free will? if we function, start functioning, for example, like amorally, and realize that there's no objective reality and there's no God that's going to judge us on how we do, and we have to find this, how we have to figure out for ourselves how we live, you know, out without God, right? Without this everything like him, that, or this thing determining free will, morality, meaning.
Okay, well, you know? Why don't we move on to morality then?
Yeah.
Morality this is actually mentioned in the Richard Dawkins, The God Delusion, as well. He's actually a biologist, is what his main trade is.
I watch a lot of videos on evolution.
And the idea that a morality has to come from an outside source isn't in conjunction with the evolution theory, because what happens is we have empathy and we have social constructs because those constructs and that thought process have helped us as a species to continue to survive. That's why we have those. There are variations. There are people who don't. And it's the variation that keeps us versatile. It's unfortunate for those that don't, and especially for the people that they affect in our society as it is today. But that's part of evolution is that we are changing, and that a lot of the things that you consider to be moral come from that empathy alone. Like, for instance, you know, I would assume that you would say murder is wrong. Most people do.
I don't think, but
there are people that don't.
I don't say nothing is wrong. Everything is permissible. I mean, it depends, I guess.
That's a Bible phrase, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, without God, anything is permissible.
I think everything is permissible.
I have no desire to go out there and murder people. I have no desire to go cheat, to steal. You know, I actually am trying to do what I can to help other people. Why? Because it makes me feel like a better person.
Why does it? Do you want to feel like a better person? It's in this God framework.
It's chemical reaction in the head. I mean, you get chemicals when you love someone. I believe. What's that? Why do I have trouble remembering words?
I guess, like, if you're gonna argue that way, so that's sort of like what I used to believe, emotivism.
You're trying to find reason when the reason that you're asking for is an intelligent, like, it's coming. You want a reason that comes from an intelligent source, but what the reality is, the underlying nature of it is that you have chemical process going on in your brain, and that
but here's the thing, where
they come from.
I mean, you're right. The chemical process in our brain, our biology, greatly determines, you know, how we
there's
behave.
Even structures in your brain for particular activities.
Well,
there
these mimetic things that we've acquired, the mimetic traits that we've acquired for a very long time, you know, in the evolution of man. I guess, like, they definitely determined how we're functioning and how we think we're supposed to function, you know, as a society, because we need to, like, have empathy to survive and everything. But, like, what I'm trying to get towards is, like,
actually, that's not the way empathy works. Empathy is not about individual survival. It's about group survival.
An empathetic individual will definitely not survive in a group most of the time, right? Because of isolation, everything. But what I'm trying to say, get at, is, like, why don't we try to figure out how we behave without relying on these things that are obsolete, like.
Oh, there are plenty of people out there doing it. I would recommend Sam Harris has a whole video series.
I don't like Sam Harris. He's object. I don't any secular humanist or atheist who claims to have arrived at some objective morality is just another a new religion. It's no different. It's no different.
I didn't realize he said that there was an objective morality.
So, I think his book was like the moral ground, like moral, something like that.
Where he's actually the one that was saying, what I, my perspective, which is, even though free will is an illusion, we have to treat it as a societal level, as though it's not.
Yeah, but he also said that in, when it comes to morality, like we have to find some common ground, you know, where that we actually exist in reality. But so yeah, I don't really agree with him in that part, because I'm an amoralist. So, are you an amoralist, or do you have some sort of like?
No, I think morals are real. I just don't think that they come from a supernatural.
What do you mean?
Place, I believe they. Are real? Well, morals are. But when I hear the word morals, what I think of is the compulsion to do what you think is the right thing. And what that right thing is where the word morals applies.
How morality is defined. Morality is whether or not a set of beliefs of good or bad. Action.
Right, that's behavior. What I was referring to when I said the right thing.
So
you have in your head a list of things that you think are
right.
Do
you think it's subjective or objective? This morality that exists.
The list is subjective. It is definitely subjective.
So it's not real.
But it is influenced. Subjective does not mean not real. What it means is that it's of one's now you're asking if there's an absolute morality that one can apply across the board.
It's subjective, then here's the thing, right? Like,
oh, I say subjective.
Yeah, exactly. But like, if something's subjective, then everyone that the thing in itself is not there. It's just determined by each person, right?
Yeah, that's referred to as metaphysical. It is. Information.
So anything metaphysical.
It is not a physical structural.
Yeah, but anything metaphysical is definitely a social construct.
Yes, it is a social construct.
Okay.
But it exists. So there are levels. Okay, so you have your individual morality that's in your head. You have your group morality of what your group that you're around, you know, certain people. You know, for instance, don't like profanity, and they view that as an immoral thing to do. Whereas other groups, they don't care. In fact, they revel in it. And then you have the groups of groups, and then you end up at society where we have elected officials that we elect because we agree with what their morals are, and they make the laws that we force onto society in general of the things that we find that are really important. For instance, not murdering, or you know. Not stealing and things like that.
Yeah, I get it. Like, but that's more about like trying to conform to society, you know. But morality is more about
No. It's a two part system. We elect the people to make people collectively see and then they make the laws, and then it comes back to us to fulfill laws that the greater society deems responsible. It's not the fulfilling of the greater society's demand. One could do it out of conformity.
But what you're saying about like this group morality and stuff, it's generally just a collection of individual morals, right? That tend to conform with each other, merge with each other, for them to survive.
There are
as a
patterns.
Group. Yeah.
Yes, that's what I was saying earlier. There
but
are patterns
how is
in
it real?
Individual morality that we generally agree.
But how is the subjective morality
I
that
don't
you
know
subscribe to?
I mean, by how is it real?
Because you said that.
Well, because if I do something I think that's immoral, then I get, and my brain gives me bad chemicals that tell me, oh, that's not good, you know, like stress, anxiety. I don't know what the chemicals are that, or the hormones are that produce those feelings, but, you know, or uneasiness in my stomach.
But that's just normative behavior that has chemical reactions in your brain. That's not
absolutely.
That's not real. And, though. It's just
if you want to personify it or pretend that it's magical in some way, I guess you can. But underlying factors, it is a conglomeration of the individuals of society putting their individual morals into a pot and seeing what is in common.
Okay, if
we can call that morality, if you like.
If you're gonna say that this subjective morality is real because if I do this, then my brain reacts that way, I could give you that, you know. But like, if you're gonna say,
and then when you have two people together, yeah, but if you discuss it amongst yourselves,
yeah, but if you're gonna say an is ought where because if I do this, my brain reacts that way, I have to act this certain way. These ways because of how my brain reacts. If you say you have to, you ought to, then I don't agree with that. You know, just because your brain tells you or reacts that way to your behavior doesn't mean you have to do it or not. You know,
no, that is your brain telling you to or not to do it.
Well, here's the thing, right? My brain telling me whether or not something is good or bad doesn't really determine whether something is good or bad for me, you know.
Well, we're using the phrase your brain tells you. You decide. It's the thought process in your head. Your brain doesn't tell you. Your brain thinks it, and that brain thinking it is you.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right?
Saying?
Yeah,
but so me. Nobody's telling you.
But my brain or me. Going through that process of thinking, oh, this is right, this is wrong, this behavior is right or wrong, doesn't make it like actually it, like ontologically or inherently or intrinsically good or bad, you know?
Well, no, not intrinsically.
Okay.
There's no such thing as intrinsic moral. It's all subjective based on our reality that we exist in.
So there is no, like, because I've determined that it's good or bad, or my thought process is determined that it's good or bad, that I have to follow it, right?
Well, you do follow it.
But you don't have to.
If you don't follow it, then you've made the decision not to follow it, and that is also within your own moral
capability. But here's
capability.
The thing, though, right? Like, in society, there are things that a lot of humans disagree on, like laws and behavior, norms, cultures, trends, mm-hmm. fads, you know? Sometimes you do the things that you think aren't right because the rest of society tells you to do so. But you don't even, so you don't really follow what you think is right. You know what I mean? Or you don't have to follow.
I know what you're saying, but I don't agree with it. You're making the decisions, you know. That's what's going on in your head. We're talking about the brain. We're talking about the brain tells you this is you doing. If it's your brain, it's you. So do you do it? Then you do have to. If you don't do it, then you don't have to. As a matter of fact,
though,
if you don't do it,
you
can't.
What you're doing is like you're replacing God with your what your brain tells you, right? For example, in this analogy, like God tells you, "Oh, this is wrong, this is bad," so you have to do that. What good? The good, not
well,
the bad.
That's even with a God or whatever telling you that, you still have your brain making the decision, one way or the other. Now, whether you get the idea that it's good from there, or whether you get the idea that it's good or bad from the government telling you, for instance, in the U.S., much of the U.S., marijuana is illegal. I know a lot of people that do it. Even though it's illegal where they do it. I also know a lot of people that do it where it's legal. But, you know, the government's telling them that it's wrong. They disagree with the government. The government telling them isn't forcing their morality because they have decided that they disagree with the government. Now, the same thing goes with God. You get a list of things that God says to do. You're free to disagree with it inside your own body, inside your own head. You're free to disagree with it. If, you know, God says how to govern slaves and you decide, I think governing slaves is a really bad thing to do, then, you know, maybe don't do that.
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, going back to just the individual subjective morality, I think we could sort of divide the human mind in sections, right? Like, for example, there's this conscience. We could, you know, the evolutionarily acquired conscience where that tells us like this is good, this is bad, right? But there's also this part of ourselves, like their ego, who that determines like do I have to follow what my conscience tells me is right or wrong. For me, like, you don't have
absolutely.
To
absolutely I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you don't have
this
to.
This really goes back to the to the bee analogy. You have parts of your brain telling you one thing, you have other parts of your brain telling you the other, and whichever one wins that battle of chemicals, for lack of a better word, is what you ultimately end up doing. That's how your brain makes the decision.
In the context of determinism. In the context of determinism, that granted that determinism is how humans behave.
Well, I would say in the context of physics.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. So,
I mean, we haven't proved that there's a multiverse, and honestly, I don't know that there's a way to even prove that. And if there was a multiverse happening at every single chemical reaction, then there would not only be several you, there would be functionally an infinite amount, many of you, and, you know, whichever you happens to be. And they've even discussed that on PBS Spacetime, which is a fascinating YouTube channel, actually.
So morality, free will. The other thing that's really that used to be my like burden was meaning, you know, because as a Christian, like God gave my life meaning, you know, I exist in this world to evangelize, to love other people. But like when I removed God from, you know, that the frame of mind, I was like in a vacuum, literally in the dark, like, what am I supposed to do now? You know, I explored, I guess, like absurdism, existential nihilism.
I mean, you asked me if I was a nihilist in the messenger, and functionally, I suppose at the end, we're all going to be, you know, dissipated black holes, you know. But to me, and this is how I deal with it. I'm not changing the subject, I don't think. But how I deal with it is I focus on what's here right now. And what's here right now for me is, you know, I have my parents over here. And, you know, I try to help them out, try to love them. They try to love me back. I have my children. You know, I try to give them the attention. And it makes me feel good doing that. But also, I acknowledge the bigger world out there. And I don't know if I find it my mission just because I'm a nice guy, but I try to focus on things that I can do to make the world a better place, not just for me, but for everyone.
But you see what you're doing, right?
And it's a mission.
Yeah, that's generally...
I'm finding my own mission.
No, but that frame of mind, like a way of thinking, you know, that's what most like religious people or that... like that.
They want you to think.
That's how we have been thinking. As humans, you know, that all this is valuable. It's like it matters, but it doesn't. You know, it doesn't matter in the way we think it matters.
Do you have children?
Not yet. I'm 24.
Okay, you're 24. I had children. I had a child at 24. Mindset and caring about other people actually changes. At least in me, it did, and I've heard other people. It changes when you have an offspring because you are responsible for that offspring. You are the one to make sure that new person is going to be happy and provided for. And to me, doing that is part of society. I have to make sure society functions in order for that. And that is it's a selfish action in a sense because it's me looking at my own progeny and thinking this is the only way for me to continue to exist is for me to exist through my, you know, progeny. Once I, you know,
is that really what you think? Is that really what you think? When you look at your son, you see him as the key to your immortality.
I mean, no, not immortality in a sense, but I care about him. And, you know,
you care about him in the religious people sense, right? Where like there's love, real thing.
No, well, love isn't religious. Love is if the concept of love is called religious, it's simply been hijacked.
Animals don't have like in the natural world, you know, of evolution and death and killing and reproduction. They're like love is just an illusion, the same way as free will.
No, love is a chemical reaction.
It's just a chemical reaction fooling mammals to procreate, so that they would take care of their young. It is the only function. That's how we survived. Do you agree or disagree?
But does it make you feel good?
Yeah, it does, because that's how we evolved. But
it activates your reward center.
But the chemicals of my brain will not determine what I believe or not. You know, the same way.
No, the chemicals of your brain are you.
But that is you. I can defy it right now, right? Like, I don't have to follow.
No, you can't.
The brain chemicals in my brain are not a substitute for God.
Every word that you're saying, every movement that you make, you're swiveling in your chair, you're moving your arm, now you're laughing. All that comes from the interactions of the chemicals in your head. They are literally you.
Well, I mean, like, that. I guess that's sort of like a different topic because of, like, you know, of us still living in a world where we think there are still still agents of free will, right? But if you really look at, like, a deterministic universe, you know, us sharing data information is really just the universe just talking to itself, right? Like ego death.
In a sense, you know? Yes.
So in a way, like,
I mean, the idea of ego is from probably obsolete, you know, form of
psychology. Using it in the
and that's not to say that the psychology doesn't have a lot of benefits, but, you know, understanding the exact ways the brain works with neuroscience, what it's discovering is that some of the things in the old form of psychology is actually incorrect.
But overall,
some of it is.
But do you see what I'm getting at? Where like free will, morality, meaning, you know, the existence of other minds, right? These are presumptions that we used to have. You know, back then, when we didn't understand the nature of the universe, of physics. But now that we have this understanding,
and we still don't understand it all.
Yeah, but we could definitely remove a lot of these things that are obsolete, right? And really see things for how they are. But we aren't, because we enjoy these brain chemicals giving us dopamine and making us feel like, oh, I'm happy, I feel loved. No,
you can. Well, you're talking about the behavior that the
I'm the reward center in the brain. I'm saying that, like, what I'm saying is, like, people are still are preferring to live in blissful ignorance, because living otherwise and seeing the reality for what it is not a good ride. It's not a good journey, you know.
Oh no. I don't necessarily think that the average person should be aware of all of the things that are going on in their body. I mean, I could go on to bacteria and start talking about the bacteria that are in your body, but you might become a germaphobe. you don't need to know all that. And that's why I keep going back to what I originally said.
That's kind of like
free will.
It's kind of
an illusion.
But it's kind of hypocritical, here's the thing, right?
We need to operate, though, as if there is free will, because that's how our body behaves.
But I agree with you.
What processes the free will?
But here's the thing.
Processes the free will underneath the hood isn't important to the average person.
But here's the thing, right? Isn't that kind of hypocritical? Because you say you're an atheist, so that's an aspect of your life where you determined, hey, I don't think there is a God, so I won't believe there is a God, and that's how I will function, right? But now, when you're questioning about, like,
no, it didn't happen like that at all.
So that didn't happen like that. Like, so how did you become an atheist?
One second I wasn't. One second I was.
Okay. Let's talk about
the decisions going on in my brain.
Yeah, let's talk about the transition, though, right? Like you believing in God could have been a lot better for you. Not gonna lie, right? Your family would be more accepting of you. You would be part of, like, the church and the congregation and everything, be part of it, more solidified in the community, you know, which is
I would totally 100% agree with that.
Yeah. So you decided to risk that for the sake of seeing, preferring what you believe is true, right? Of seeing things the way they are.
No, I did not. There is no risk in finding the truth. If there is truth, and
why
it
don't
should be found.
Why don't you do that in the same way about free will, meaning, like the illusion of love, empathy, the illusion of empathy? You know, why don't you see the truth for what it is?
I acknowledge that they're illusions, and I acknowledge that they are.
But you're
there
still living in the illusion. Your frame of mind is still acting as if this illusion is real.
My brain is producing.
But your brain
illusion.
Is not your God. Well, you could change your brain chemicals, right?
Okay.
The same way you stop believing in God, you can stop believing in these things.
No, I didn't have a conscious choice in that.
But humans can definitely choose to believe in some things and stop believing in some things. You know, when they can realize.
They can realize, but that realization isn't making an arbitrary choice. You decide
humans
your brain
can
has
learn,
information to
humans
decide.
Can unlearn, right? That I think that's
yep.
a fact.
And it is a fact. But the decisions that you make are based on what you have in your head at the moment. And yeah. you aren't really in control of what's in your mind at the moment.
Well, I mean, retrospectively, right? Like right now, even though if my future self is like determined already, like whatever, but if I function and follow, you know, my brain chemicals and unlearn something, like free will, like the illusion of love or the illusion of empathy. If I can unlearn that right now, then I would be following the brain chemicals forward to that deterministic future, right? There's no contradiction
okay.
in that logic.
Well, if you would have to decide to do that, which is a now decision, and then follow through with it.
Exactly. But you could do that too, but you're not. But you could do the same.
I can't. I can't do that though, because there is no path to that.
What do you mean?
I can't unlearn the things that I've learned. I could get a lobotomy. I could literally have it physically taken from me.
I would say because of how you've evolved, and it's in your genetic nature to be a father and live that illusion out.
Yeah, that part of it. Yeah. I thought you were talking about believing in God.
No.
No, there's no evidence for that, and
yeah.
I've been looking because, as you said, it would be in my societal best interest to actually believe that.
So why not? If you're gonna live out this illusion of love, and because it's in your genetic nature, why not just stay atheist, go back and be part of the community, live that illusion as well? You know, like if you're gonna be illusioned in this side, why not everything else?
Well, because that I don't know that that's necessarily an illusion. That's the activation of the reward center of your brain. That is a physical activity that's going on in there. We call it love. We attribute it to special attributes to it, but really what we're experiencing is the reward system of the brain.
Well, you could say the same thing with the human tendency to believe in applying agency to the universe, right? And seeing like these correlations of activities. Why not let that sink in too?
But understanding that the reaction to oxytocin, for instance, is what we call love, and it is what it's my reward center, doesn't change the fact that it is my reward. I'll give you an example. If I understood how alcohol worked, it doesn't change how alcohol works. If I understand how oxytocin works, it doesn't change that the oxytocin is there, and it doesn't change that it's rewarding me. And it's a natural reward that, frankly, almost every activity you do produces some sort of reward. Eating, sleeping, and that's what keeps you doing it. It's granted subconscious for the most part.
Yeah.
But it's what keeps you moving. I would guess. I'm not a neuroscientist.
Yeah. Going back to the question of, are we humans ready to remove like all of these obsolete things, like these illusions that we acquired because of, you know, of evolution? Like, even from you're a very intellectual guy, like you still won't, you know, overcome.
I may have misunderstood the original question.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I thought you were, when you said that, I was thinking that you were talking about things that that come from God or from come from the church. For instance,
the
community from the church. But we have an innate desire for community. Do we ignore that innate desire, or do we say, well, I'm going to ignore the innate desire because I understand that it's simply chemicals going on in my head, you know, but the desire is still there, whether or not we understand that it's coming from chemicals in our head. We could, and as I said before, there are parts of the brain dedicated to specific activities. We could remove the reward center of your brain if they've located it. I don't know if they have. But the problem with that is you have literally no, you have no motivation to do anything. Zilch. Nothing. Nada. If they remove the reward center from your brain.
Well, have you heard of anti-humanism?
No.
So that's where I'm at right now. So anti-humanism is basically like a counter against humanism, because humanism basically means believes like humanity is the center of everything. You know, like human rights, human freedom, will, right? Like all these things valued in humanism, like morality.
I never caught that from that.
That's generally what humanism is, right? So anti-humanism is a counter to that, where it's saying like humans are just a part of everything else. You know, we're not that special. You know, like the value of human life is not much more valuable than bacteria or corals or a bird flying in the sky. You know, we're not special.
But to each other we are. Yes.
Yeah.
To each other we are, and that's part of the reward center.
Yeah, we're just animals, like existing. You know, in this universe. You know, that's what anti-humanism is.
We are a bit different in some ways, and that the predominant ways that we not only can but do pass on ideas and information to each other, and have been doing it for a very long time.
Well,
we have thoughts that no other animals are even prepared to have.
Yeah. So, anti-humanists even have views where, like, if humanity went extinct right now, like it wouldn't be a bad thing or a good thing. It would just be what it is, you know.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I can't agree or disagree with that, because if there were no humans here, then there's nobody to say that humans not being here is bad. But as there are humans here, there are reasons to say that having humans here in and of itself could be considered bad. As its effect on the world, I mean, we can see. I mean, well, okay. To put it in perspective, when the plants were initially making oxygen, they were creating their own poison, and they filled their world with a poison. And that poison could have killed them off, except for animals came by and started eating the poison. It's not poison to animals. Oxygen's not poison to animals. It's not so much that the oxygen is poison to plants so much as they were consuming all of the carbon dioxide, and there wasn't any left until we started making the carbon dioxide. In the same manner, you know, we're making all these plastics. They're filling the earth. They are killing other animals. You know, I've heard, I don't know how prevalent it is, but I've heard that microfibers found in all sorts of places, like, you know, even turtles' abdomens and stuff like that. And they're harmful for those. But I've also heard that there are bacteria that are learning to eat the plastics. And what is going to happen with that? I don't know. Maybe they'll become prevalent, and maybe they'll get rid of our entire plastic problem altogether. Mm. Maybe they'll create a poison that kills us. We don't know, you know. But there are a lot of negative views.
What are you getting at? Like,
I'm just saying that the idea that the world would be better without humans.
In a perspective, you know, if you look at it that way.
In the perspective of we are
parasites,
causing what we perceive to be harm. As a species, we are causing what we perceive to be harm.
So I mentioned anti-humanism because, like, what you were talking about, like removing things in their brain, altering what it means to be human. You know, because all these reward systems, it makes us human, right? Like the innate desire for community, love. You know, oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin. You know, so anti-humanism is saying like all these things, like what it means to be human, it doesn't matter, right? But then you move on from anti-humanism to post-humanism, and you say, okay, if all these things, like how we are as humans, doesn't really matter in the scope of everything, then maybe we could alter it into something better. That's what post-humanism is.
We're alter it into something better.
What it means to be human, like post-humanism, you know, like moving into like a digital realm or something, you know. Or
an AI,
yeah, or removing all possibility of evil in mankind, or removing all these
evil's a subjective concept, yeah, anyways. Is. If there weren't any people, there wouldn't be any evil because there's nobody to attribute it as evil.
Yeah, but you get what I'm saying, right? Being human is not sacred anymore, from my perspective. You know, we don't have to stay this way.
I agree with you. And I agree with that perspective. I should say, rather, I'm not sure that you're saying that is your perspective, but I agree with that perspective to the extent of to you, there is something that you have that nobody else has. And it's something that you lose when you're done with it. That is you-ness, the you that is you. And without that, there's no perception of the rest of this is going on.
But here's the thing, right? Like, if you have ego and death, and you understand that your consciousness is just a naturally occurring thing, you know, like just clash of cells, you understand that you still exists, there is no though. You there is no you, you're just you're just living in an illusion of self-awareness, right? When you die, Your consciousness will just dismantle, right, and be part of the universe again.
Well, that's what I hope for. What actually goes on in the brain after death is really a mystery. I'm hoping it's just like just falling asleep and then it's over, and then there's more thoughts, because the brain wasn't designed to die. The body was designed to die. The brain wasn't designed to die. So what happens while you're dying?
That's interesting.
In the brain? I don't
know. That's an interesting
person. It's like when you turn a computer off, what happens to all those electrical bits? You know, that's one of the reasons why they tell you when you unplug your modem, leave it off for 30 seconds so we make sure everything's gone.
What I believe is that, like, consciousness is a fundamental substance of the universe. You know, like, even this cup has, like, consciousness particles, like, all over it, but it's too little to measure, you know? But then, like, if you have, like...
That.
Yeah.
Well, I said you can believe that, but I mean, I'm not sure that what evidence you could provide for that test that idea.
That is definitely actually, like, you know, there's a school of thought in physics that believes that the idea it's mainly like idealism, you know, where you.
It sounds more like philosophy than physics.
Philosophy and physics sort of blend with each other because of, like, simulation theory.
They do, you know? Not.
They do. Like, for example, are you aware of... so here's the thing about, like, metaphysics, right? Like, you know the double-slit experiment?
Yes.
So the double-slit experiment was basically, like, if you shoot some electrons into two things, the two... If you look at it, they pass through. But if you don't, some of them hit. So, like, the only difference in that experiment was there was an existing observer, like, trying to manifest.
Yes, but you're using the observer. You're using the word observer to infer some intelligent agency. It does not have to be an intelligent agency. It could be. Chemical reaction from the light hitting something that is supposed to measure it of sorts.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, I'm not really an expert on the double split experiment, you know, and I'm like a physicist, but like a lot of them concluded from that experiment that like the universe is fundamentally made up of consciousness, you know, like, and everything, and then the simulation theory, you know, everything is binary and stuff, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's you should look into that if you, you know.
I'll look into it.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, like, what about, like, politics? What's your politics?
I'm pretty liberal.
Liberal? What do you mean by liberal? Like,
I'm in favor of... actually, probably not a great time for me to talk about that. My mom's spread here.
Anyways, like,
let's just say we have different views.
But right now, it's actually 10:43, and it's been awesome talking to you, Joshua. Is there anything that you want to close out? You know, like, tell the audience or promote something. It was really a good conversation.
No, I think that we were kind of at a good wrap up point. Yeah. I felt like. It was excellent talking to you.
All right. Well,
maybe we can do this again one day.
Actually, I am going to invite you again. You know, that it would be awesome to just chill and like talk about more of these topics. All right. See you.
All right. It's good talking to you.